they are over-messaging. We typically find people who are sending more messages, make more incremental dollars, and have better ROI on the channel. Most people should send a couple more texts. It's orders that you could be generating that you're not generating. There's just some sales processes that can't be completed with just a PDP. And anywhere a PDP isn't going to complete the sale on its own, which is, you know, what's the average abandoned cart rates? Like what, 70% or so? It gives us an opportunity to take a second attempt at closing those other 70%. And we're pretty successful at it and customers love it.
Mike, welcome to the D2C podcast. Today, we're talking about SMS. I think it's a topic our audience has sort of an endless appetite for. But you're an OG in the SaaS game, and you've been in this SMS space for 3 years. Talk a little bit about your background, and then I want to hear, in your 3 years going deep in this SMS world, what do you think is something that people still don't fully understand about the channel?
Yeah, so starting with the SaaS part, I've been in SaaS my entire career in B2B software. Postscript is the first place where it's been e-commerce focused. But I always joke with folks that, like, you know, if B2B SaaS ends up getting like automated by AI, like I will be out of a job. It's the only thing I know how to do. It's the only thing I've done for my entire career. So I hope that B2B software continues to be a major growth industry. Transitioning to Postscript from a B2B SaaS environment, I had spent time in SMB and enterprise. E-com's just different than every other market, honestly. And I didn't think that was going to be the case when I joined. I thought that, okay, all the patterns from selling enterprise deals will transfer over. But there's something unique about the ecosystem, the community itself, and how open it is. Every single person that you're selling to, no matter how big their business is kind of like an entrepreneur at their core. And when you're selling to an entrepreneur audience, they think about what they're investing in differently than, you know, someone who's just running a business line at a company. You know, every dollar's got to work for them in some particular way. And that's just another consideration, another hurdle in selling and servicing the direct-to-consumer world. So it's been really, really fun, though. I absolutely love being connected to entrepreneurs, growing their businesses, making a dent in the world, creating the next wave of like legacy brands for consumers. And it's just way more rewarding than selling a piece of software that's going to get like used by some random people in a back office in a Fortune 500 company. So I've very much enjoyed my foray into e-com. And I joke with my B2B SaaS friends that, like, I don't know if I can go back later in my career to selling anything to any other audience. So very, very, very much enjoyed it.
That's been my experience too. Just it's infectious to be around these people that have this passion, that are like creating these businesses that create jobs, that give other people more passion. But it's a double-edged sword. I'm just seeing some of the discourse this week on Google's troubles and the rap right now on like Google reps who don't, some of the Google reps I'm hearing, they don't get that entrepreneurial mindset as much. So they'll be advising you to do things that like are on their roadmaps that their higher ups are pushing you to do, but they're not following through that it always makes the most sense for the actual e-com entrepreneur. And there's e-com entrepreneurs just have like a radar for bullshit. Like, is this going to help me incrementally or not? And there's all brass tacks, right?
Yeah. I would say it's a big problem, and it's also not that difficult to change. Like, one of the things we do at Postscript is we have like a Google sheet that's like the D2C news kit. The D2C podcast is on there among a bunch of other media outlets. And people are like, how do I get up to speed on e-com? It's like, well, subscribe to all this stuff, read it, listen to it, follow these people on Twitter to get their takes. Like, if you just really dive into the community and really, you know, take the time to listen, you know, you can figure it out quickly. I think a lot of people just aren't willing to do the work, but it's all out there, right? One of the great things about e-com is people are willing to share their knowledge all over the place. So if you want to go understand what e-commerce folks care about, there's plenty of places to go do that. And we make sure that our team like has that as a part of their, you know, daily flow of information. You know, we there's another podcast with a bunch of our customers on it, and they did an episode about attribution. It's really important that we understand how our customers think about attribution. You know, we sent that out in the Slack channel to our all of our customer-facing folks, and we're like, look, you know, when you're on your on a run or where you have a couple a little bit of downtime or you're, you know, doing some deep work and you just gonna have something in the background, like play this podcast. You should understand how our customers think about this very, very important topic. So, you know, dig into it. It's a little bit of a, you know, guided independent study. And if you do that, I think you can get the vibes right. You can understand what people really care about. But you know, a lot of folks aren't willing to do that work, and it comes through. You know, it comes through in the relationships. You end up feeling disconnected from your vendors or from your partners, like they don't really understand you. And I think it's, you know, it's on us as the vendor class to make sure that we are, you know, delivering value to our customers all the time. And that requires us to understand what they care about most.
100%. I go way back with Alex. He's been on the podcast. He spoke at a mastermind I did in San Diego in 2019, way in the early days of PostScript. SMS has come a long way. So back to that original question there, what's something that you think that e-com entrepreneurs out there, that not all of them, are still fully grasping about SMS as a channel? What's a mistake you'd correct?
Yeah, the number one thing that we get from people is everyone is worried that they are over-messaging. But what we typically see is that most people are under-messaging. And I think it has to do with the fact that everyone gets texts. It's like their most personal channel. So people are, you know, marketers, business owners, we all have a tendency to like project our preferences onto our market. And that's not reflected in the data. What we typically find is that, you know, people who are sending more messages make more incremental dollars and have better ROI on the channel. Obviously, there's an upper limit to that. And we could talk about like, how do you settle into what's the right sweet spot for your brand? We have a whole framework on that. But yeah, people are underutilizing the channel because they're massively under messaging to people who are giving them their phone number.
It's super interesting because it's also it's not always what our own preferences are, because like most of us as marketers are kind of banner blind, or we respect the hustle, we respect the game. And so even when it's okay that, you know, if we're saying that's too many texts, we're probably not acting like that. We're probably not holding any ill will to brands that are a little bit more on the aggressive side. And maybe totally. We're assuming that the average person would be, but that's not really what the data is saying.
Yeah. And I also think, you know, if you think about what it takes to get someone on your list in the first place, like, first of all, they have to do one of a whole range of double opt-in agreements. So it's not like email where someone just like puts a email in there and you start, you know, sending them an email twice a day forever. They have to subscribe, confirm their subscription. You have to give them the option to opt out, which they can do by just saying stop at any moment. You have to remind them of that. There's so many more preferences and compliance angles to SMS that are customer-centric. They're consumer-centric. And so everyone who's there chose to be there, and everyone who's there is being reminded constantly that they can get out of it at any moment by just texting back a four-letter word. If you consider that and you believe that, you know, people are smart enough to make their own decisions and curate their own digital experience based on that, then like they're agreeing to be texted. So you should use the channel that they're opening up for you. I would argue that consumers are more in control of what they get or don't get as it relates to SMS compared to any other channel. They have more control over it, and that's by design. And so, yeah, I just think that, if you consider those factors, you shouldn't be afraid to message people, because they can always stop getting texts from your brand at any time that they want.
Talk about the example that you have from Jones Road Beauty, Cody, friend of the podcast, top D2C, actually, no, second top podcast of all time with Cody. But talk a little bit about that example you have where they literally did a test on incrementality and how sending more messages actually got them more money.
Yeah, so Cody is a great operator. He's one of the, I think, more data-oriented folks who are using, you know, not just SMS, but all channels. And so naturally we got to the point where we were generating great results for Jones Road. Cody's asking, how far can we push the channel? I want to understand what's the ceiling and what's the floor as it relates to incremental results. So what we did is we built a study where we had three different treatment groups. One of the treatments that we did was a complete holdout. So people who didn't get any texts for that month. Another group was the baseline. They tend to send one message per week. So those people would get four texts in a month. And then we had a 2X. So people who got eight texts in a month, two times a week, as opposed to one. And what we were really looking at is not, you know, postscripts in platform attribution. What we were really looking at is, what is the spending behavior on Jones Road site in these different cohorts in that given month? And what we found is that not only did the single text a week drive significant incrementality, but when we did 2X a week, we actually doubled the amount of revenue that was generated per subscriber in that group. It was 33 cents per subscriber compared to, I think it was like 18 cents for people on the one side, on the one time a week's end compared to zero. So we were getting significant incremental results from each of the groups, the one treatment and the 2X treatment. And that was really surprising to Cody, because I think he was, he thought that there would be a much lower correlation, especially with the higher messaging frequency. And, you know, at the end of it, they were really excited about the results, and they continued to experiment with sending more messages. The other side of this is, like, once you believe that there's incremental results on these different treatments, is then you want to start to figure out, how does unsubscribe rate factor into how many messages you can actually send in a given month? Because ultimately, that's like the leading indicator to know that if you're worried about over-messaging, how far can you go? You'll start to see that in your unsubscribe rate. We measure a variation of unsubscribe, which is like a cohorted unsubscribe rate every 30 days. But that's really how you can tell if you're over-messaging, if you're going, you know, from 8 to 10 messages a month, or you're going from 10 to 15 messages a month. You'll start to see where that pattern breaks when you're looking at unsubscribe rate versus messages per month. And so all that stuff fits together to be able to understand what is the sweet spot for every brand. Every brand has a different audience. So it's unlikely that what the Jones Road team is comfortable with is going to be exactly the right thing for your brand. But what I can say is, in aggregate, most people are sending less messages than they could be sending from an incrementality point of view and from an unsubscribe point of view. And that just means, you know, at the end of the day, like, what does that show up as? It's like orders that you could be generating that you're not generating. So the upside is very meaningful if you pursue kind of like finding that sweet spot for your brand. And most people should send a couple more texts.
And so I think this, you kind of described, this is the framework you kind of described for determining how many you can send. One, are you sending, maybe elaborate on that a little bit more. It's basically just looking for that when you reach an unsub threshold that you're comfortable with. And then within that, how do you know, like with the Jones Road example, were they sending the same kinds of, when they doubled their messages, did they send another kind of message, or was it a similar message just worded in a different way?
Yeah. Ultimately, with the Jones Road experiment, we tried to keep the messaging pretty similar. So it was all like, you know, direct CTA based, selling something, introducing a product for a price. So we didn't experiment with, this wasn't an experiment to try to determine whether or not like a founder story text was better than a discount text, which like, that's a worthwhile thing to test on your own. But for the sake of getting a clean incrementality test, we tried to make all of the messages like. And so we were just promoting buying a particular product, highlighting a certain product. So they were all very similar texts, product variations, copy variations, but ultimately we're driving towards a purchase CTA. So they're all kind of like the same type of message. On the framework side of things, we have this part of our dashboard. We call it subscriber LTV. It basically looks at a bunch of metrics that we think are interrelated, right? Like there's acquisition rate, which is how many subscribers are you generating versus the amount of orders that you're getting. There's a ratio there that's ideal. We have a M score, which is how many messages are you sending in a given month. We have a revenue metric, which is looking at revenue per subscriber. And then we have this unsubscribe rate. And all of those kind of fit together to generate a score that we look at inside of the PostScript dashboard that tells us, is this program healthy? And if it's not healthy, which of those metrics are the ones that are out of whack based on the benchmarks that we see of our best customers in our app? So this is like a way to like learn from the collective knowledge and the collective results that we're seeing across the huge range of PostScript customers. And so that allows our team to make very strategic recommendations to folks about how they can generate more revenue and create a healthier program. But it also lets brands take a look at the dashboard themselves and see where they might want to push the envelope a little bit. You know, should I send that next text? Well, you can use your subscriber LTV dashboard to determine whether or not that's going to do good or harm to your program. So an SMS, we decided we needed to build our own measurement framework for that because the channel's just so unique. It doesn't abide by exactly the same rules that, you know, email does. And so a lot of people are like, well, why do I need a new measurement framework for SMS? And you know, the truth is just fundamentally different than email. The way that people digest it, the space that it occupies in someone's you know, personal life, given that it's on probably the most intimate channel they have, the fact that it's immediate, the fact that it's two-way by nature, all of those things just create a different type of relationship between the consumer and the brand on this channel. And that's why we built our own sort of measurement framework.
And it's just such a super potent channel. I do podcasts with our retention team all the time, and they're a very Klaviyo focused agency. And there's just so many things going on with you know, Gmail intermediating the box, the spam rates change, you know, the spam rate thresholds changing. It still feels like such SMS is such a huge opportunity when you look at how fraught the email world is and is becoming. I guess you can get the same thing. Like if you treat your SMS channel poorly, you can sometimes get a dead list, right? If you've mailed your list sort of like indiscriminately for too long, you're going in the promo folder, you could be going in the spam box. There's all sorts of ways that your list could be unoptimized. Can that happen on SMS as well, or are those protections not as much in place yet?
You can message if you send irrelevant messages to a list for a long enough time, you'll get two things to happen at once. One, a lot of people will unsubscribe. You know, like that's the built-in way that you know, is this resonate at the very basic level? Is my message resonating with the people who have opted into this list or not? You can look at an unsubscribe benchmark and see how you factor up against it. And if it's out of whack, then you know that what you're saying in the channel is not resonating with folks. A lot of people will also just stay on the channel because they're too lazy to unsubscribe or they don't care to. Those folks are unlikely to, you know, engage in the channel over time. So the same sort of like, you know, win back strategies, reactivation strategies that you might do over email, they apply to SMS as well. But ultimately, you know, when you think about list hygiene and list engagement and that sort of way of thinking, a lot of that stuff does apply. Now, you won't have like a dead list. Like if you import a list that has been compliantly opted in, you know, you can keep messaging them. It's not like it's going to go into spam, for example, that you're not going to be able to deliver the messages. If you have a best-in-class SMS provider, deliverability is kind of baked in, but you might see very, very, very low engagement levels. And in that case, you could be just spending a lot of money to reach people who are essentially not listening when you're sending the text. Like ultimately, you're trying to drive engagement here. And I think, yes, clicks is one way to look at it. Replies are one way to look at it. I think in general, using the subscriber LTV methodology that I described earlier, that's in the PostScript account, is meant to help you understand, am I creating an engaged program that can stand the test of time and be an asset for the business? Or am I just creating a list of people that I'm trying to like exhaust to its natural conclusion and creating like a, you know, leaky bucket of people who are unsubscribing or disengaging at the same rate that I'm acquiring them. You can do that and still make money. That's just not what we teach our customers to do, because we believe SMS can drive a two-way sort of long-term relationship with the customer in a way that a lot of other channels can't. And that's worth, you know, building for the long term, as opposed to just, you know, the old batch and blast methodology that people used to use. So that's kind of like how we think about it. But yeah, I mean, our best customers are cleaning their lists. They're doing win back campaigns, reactivation campaigns. And when people aren't engaging with that stuff, they're pulling them off. And they're focusing on engaging with people who do want to get their texts. And I think that if you're trying to maximize ROI, that's a good practice to be in, similar to what you would do with email.
Now, PostScript made the decision early on to be a focus strictly on the SMS channel. I know there's a lot of partners that are doing SMS through their email provider. Why are some of the bigger brands who you're now working with, who you've mentioned already, why have they migrated off of an all-in-one solution and towards a company like PostScript where you're solely focused on SMS?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's one we get a lot. And I think there's product-oriented reasons, and then there's more like philosophical reasons. I'll bucket the product-oriented reasons into, there are definitely features and products that only exist on PostScript that make people more money. On-site opt-in, for example, is an opt-in methodology that we built, which uses a one-time password authentication to keep people on site, but still double opt them in. It drives faster list growth. It also drives better downstream conversion because you aren't interrupting the buying process. That's something that PostScript built. We have Fondue, which is a company we acquired, cashback offers in your welcome series and in your pop-ups to drive faster list growth and better profitability. We have a agent-led sales product called SMS Sales, where we actually sell proactively on behalf of our customers and drive incremental results. So there's a whole bunch of products that are SMS-centric that only exist on PostScript that all drive incremental revenue. And the headline for that would be, because we're SMS-focused, we wake up every single day and all we think about is building revenue-driving SMS products to help our customers make more money from the channel. That is our focus. Now, when you think about the other folks who have SMS offerings, who are ESPs or retention players or whatever they do, a bunch of different things that they're shooting for, their focus when they're building their product is not 100% laser focused on SMS as a channel. And so as opposed to the way that we're approaching building our platform. And as a result of that, you know, we tend to have the latest and greatest stuff that's possible on SMS on PostScript. One of our goals when we're building product is to invent the future of SMS. And so I think like that's something we deliver on, that we want to continue to deliver on. And so there's tons and tons of things in our product that either don't exist anywhere else or exist on PostScript well before they exist in other places. Now, the philosophical thing that I would say is it's kind of related to that focus, but because our entire team wakes up and thinks about revenue-driving SMS strategy for all of our customers, we deliver better strategy and better service on the channel than anyone else. And I feel very confident saying that. I think the reason that large nine-figure brands like Jones Road and True Classic and Ridge and, you know, Dr. Squatch, HexClad, et cetera, why all those folks have decided to move their programs to PostScript is really because at that level where you're trying to have a best-in-class program, you need a real partner who's waking up and thinking about SMS every day. And that's exactly what PostScript delivers. And I think if you asked any of those folks why they've switched to PostScript and what they think about it, they would probably say that the partnership with our team is very, very important to them. And they feel like we're an extension of their team and we're treating their dollars like they're our own. And yes, all the features help make that more real. But ultimately, you know, people are seeking out partners that can grow with them and that they can trust over the long term. And that's what we aspire to be. And I think over the last 5 years, we've built a good reputation for ourselves. And that's why those brands have decided to move their programs to us, is there's real partnership, there's incremental revenue to go get, and they know that they're going to have the best future-proof products by partnering with us. And so those are really the main things I think people are seeking out when they choose us.
It underlies just how different the platform, you know, email and SMS are as well. I think a lot of people who come into it, you know, they cut their teeth sending all their emails, and then they think of SMS as like an extension of what they're doing on the email side. But really, like, they're two vastly different formats. There's like big limitation differences in terms of the amount of text you're using. There's like they're more different than I think people realize. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. There's like. One of my favorite things to ask people about is like why does SMS exist in the first place? Like, what's unique about it? The fact that it's two-way at its core is a under-articulated difference from email. Like, in fact, you know, emails come from like no reply email addresses all the time. Like, this is coming from an unmonitored inbox. The fact that you can reply and have an instant two-way conversation with any one of your customers or prospects is completely unique to SMS as a channel. And we have some data that supports this too. Like, there, it's not just a better customer experience. There's also dollars on the other end of that. If you lean into figuring out how to make it more conversational, more two-way, people who reply to a brand text on Postscript have up to a 4x higher LTV with that brand and what they actually purchase than people who don't. Now, if you really think about that, it might be intuitive, right? Like, the bar to get over to like have a conversation with the brand via text is a pretty high bar. These are probably like your VIPs, your happiest customers, the people who like you the most. But you have to still nurture that relationship to get that to come out, right? And it's like there's all of this opportunity to build that direct relationship with the customer that is not only easier, but native to the SMS channel that you like literally can't do with email. And I think it's interesting that people don't really lean into that as much, given the fact that like the entire premise of being direct to consumer is to like nurture that direct relationship with the people who are buying your products. And like, when I think about SMS as a channel, is like so deeply aligned to that, you know, it's like the one place where you could have a one-to-one relationship with your customer directly. And so the people who lean into that, I think, are going to make a lot more money. They're going to build better brands that can stand the test of time than people who don't lean into that. And I think that's where the future of the channel really is, okay, we know SMS marketing 1.0 or 2.0. We understand how that works. Now it's, how can we lean into the conversational nature of this channel to drive better relationships, better customer experiences, and ultimately more incremental revenue? And that's what we're thinking about right now.
So how are the best brands doing that? I think, like, are people responding to just, you know, to sales blasts, and someone will say like, ask a question, and then they'll surprise someone by having someone on the other end of it? Or what are the ways the brands that are using this best are actually enacting these conversations?
Yeah, there's a bunch of ways to do it. They're like different levels of scalability. So on the far side of it, you know, people are using like our SMS sales product, for example, where they have a literal agent staffed who's trying to build really good brand conversations and also convert more sales. That is like a complete like surprise and delight moment as well. People tend to like get the response back from a person who gives a really good answer, and they're like, oh, this is a bot, this is AI. And then when we say, actually, it's not, like, we'll like send a picture of ourselves like, hey, like, this is so-and-so, you know, texting on behalf of Dr. Squatch. And when people realize that it's not a bot, their like mind is blown. Like, it's like a, and then you have this super rich, amazing conversation with somebody that they're going to remember, they're going to tell their friends about, which is like, you know, the point of doing a lot of the marketing that we're doing, right? Like, we're trying to stand out, break through the noise, command some attention. So that's like the one, like the extremely leaned in version of that. The programmatic version is using the SMS marketing platform to drive conversational flows programmatically, where people can respond. We use a matching algorithm to be able to like send them down a journey based on things that they say. So the best versions of that are people who are doing like a quiz via conversational flow. Like, hey, I want to make a recommendation to you. Tell me, do you have like dry or oily or mixed tone skin? Person can reply, that can send them down an automated journey that feels conversational on the other end. So it doesn't have to be great. Now I have to hire an agent to be able to do this, even though that's probably the best way to delight the consumer. You can do it programmatically and still offer people a differentiated experience over the channel that they live in the most and get a lot out of it. You know, also you can collect all of that data from the conversation as zero party data back to the customer profile too, to use in future segmentation. So again, conversational is worth it. It not only drives more revenue, but it tells you a lot more about your customers, gets you closer to them, gives you data you can use in future segmentation. It creates deeper relationships, better customer experience. There's a whole host of things that you can do that really lean into what makes SMS special in the first place. If you're just going to use it exactly like email, you send an email, you send a text version of the email 10 minutes later to a whole list. Like, you can do that on PostScript. You can do that on all the providers. Will you make money at that? Probably. Is it going to be like a really important channel for your brand if that's all you're doing with it? Like, I'm not so sure. Now, if you really want SMS to maximize its performance on a bunch of different vectors, that's where you really need to start thinking about what is possible given the nature of SMS and where you want to probably push your vendor to bring some of those use cases out to your brand.
That live sales aspect sounds pretty interesting. Where are people actually using that? Where will you encounter a live sales agent on one of these brands specifically?
Yeah, so in all the standard use cases where you're trying to recover a sale, we can apply our agents. So I'll just give you an example. Caraway is a customer of PostScript. They also use our live sales product called SMS Sales. You go, so you subscribe to Caraway. You're searching around, viewing products. You end up bouncing. Someone will respond and say, you know, hey, Eric, saw you were looking at, you know, Caraway pans. You know, my name's Mike. I'm a product expert here. Did you have any questions that you didn't get answered from the site? You know, what caused you to leave today? What we're trying to do there is do basically discovery so that we can objection handle on behalf of the brand, especially high consideration brands like Caraway. You know, this person's probably trying to decide, you know, is this better than some other pan brand? What's the disc? Is there a sale coming up that I should know about to buy in a month versus buy today? What color is the most popular? How's it going to hold up in the dishwasher or not? Those are all questions that they have answered. And like, if you think about like the mental load it takes on a person on a website to get all those questions answered in one browsing session, like they have to click all over the place, read the reviews, go on the FAQs, you know, they're like, can I trust this? A lot of that stuff would be way better suited with an educated agent who could answer all those questions and usher them towards a sale via a text conversation. And so we apply that to welcome series. We'll apply it to browse abandonment, checkout abandonment. When they do sales, we'll add an agent layer on top of that. So, you know, we'll try to drive more throughput on the, you know, quarterly or biannual sales. We could basically put an agent anywhere as part of the marketing calendar. And everywhere we do that, we're driving incremental revenue because there's just some sales processes that can't be completed with just a PDP. And anywhere a PDP isn't going to complete the sale on its own, which is, you know, what's that, you know, the average abandoned cart rates, like what, 70% or so? It gives us an opportunity to take a second attempt at closing those other 70%. And we're pretty successful at it. And customers love it.
I could see it being good in other kinds of funnel support on sites like True Classic, for instance. I was buying a t-shirt on True Classic the other day. And it's like a really gamified experience where you have different tranches you're trying to get different discounts. They have crazy bundles they're offering. And in an environment that's kind of gamified like that, I imagine you just create more touch points for a conversation to happen, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's a bunch of different angles that you can go with it. You know, bundle creation's one, you know, getting people to go from a one-time buyer to a subscription. There's all those use cases can be better served by an agent just based on the fact that not 100% of the people who enter that funnel actually end up converting. That means that there's opportunity there. And if we have their text number, we can engage in a sales conversation with them to help more of those people convert. That's like the basic premise that we see play out. And people come to us because they want to drive that incremental revenue. And the revenue is great. People love that. They're increasing their top line massively. But I think what they get surprised by is the impact it has on the customer experience and the amount of people who not only, you know, have benefited from it by buying something, but the amount of people who come back and want to talk to the brand more because they've now opened up this new channel. One of my favorite things that we discovered as a part of doing this is we do a persona build with all of our customers, and we try to get the brand voice down. We give an avatar to our team so they can make sure that they're talking like the brand. Dr. Squatch, the persona that they have is a persona called Chad. And everyone who texts on behalf of Dr. Squatch talks like Chad. And so we're selling soap via the Chad persona. And we started noticing that in the Reddit community for Dr. Squatch, their biggest fans like talk about soap there. You know, there's a niche community of Dr. Squatch fans there. And they all started talking about Chad. They were like screenshotting the conversations they were having with Chad. There's posts in there like, Chad rocks. I love Chad. Like Chad support day. Like, you know, that wasn't the reason we created SMS sales as a product. But from Dr. Squatch's point of view, does it pencil on the incremental revenue side? Yes. Are they getting something they as a second order benefit that is incredibly enriching to the brand by having their community fall in love with Chad? Absolutely. Like that's amazing. And they love that. We love that. Again, getting back to like, why are we all doing this? We're trying to build brands that have a direct relationship with our customers and enrich their lives. And we can sell more stuff by doing it that way. That's like hitting on like a very, maybe like a second order effect for us, but something that is like an example of what's possible by activating SMS in a unique way. And I think it's worth pursuing for any brand out there.
I also want to talk on-site opt-in just because I've opted in to hundreds and hundreds of sites, and I've seen the same process every time. I've probably seen the same spinning wheel half the time. And you guys have come along and innovated this process. Walk me through what I haven't run across a brand using it yet. So walk me through what an on-site opt-in does and why it works better.
Yeah. So if you want to test it in the wild for anyone listening, you can True Classics using it, Hexclad's using it, Portland Leather Goods is using it. There's tons of brands out there on it. Jones Road has it as well. What on-site opt-in is, you get a normal pop-up like you would expect. You put your email in, then you get to the second step. You put in your phone number. And when you submit your phone number, it asks you to enter a code as the final step of the pop-up. That code is delivered to the number that was input into the pop-up. And it appears in the keyboard of iOS and Android devices automatically, just like when you're authenticating through Shop Pay or any of your other 2FA products that you use on mobile. And so you just tap that code that satisfies the compliance requirements for, you know, double opt-in without moving somebody off the site or requiring them to respond why to confirm their subscription. So that does a couple things. One, it grows your list faster because there's a higher completion rate of people who are actually entering the code because it's so easy to do. It also doesn't require people to go offsite. One of the alternatives to doing Reply Why is to have people open their messaging app and send a text back to verify that they want to be subscribed. And that's a big no-no in the marketing world. Adding friction to the buying experience is not something you want to do. You just paid money to buy the traffic from Meta. You drive them to the site, and then they immediately have them click on something that takes them off your site and into another app. That's not what we think people should be doing. And so because on-site opt-in doesn't require people to go off the site to complete this double opt-in process, we actually see better downstream conversion rates because we're reducing friction in the subscription process. So grows your list faster, creates a more seamless experience for the consumer, drives better downstream conversion. And yeah, we have a huge majority of our customers are using it now. It's you know, becoming the standard in opt-in for email and SMS collection in the Shopify world. And we're really, really proud of it. That's the type of innovation that, you know, we're bringing to the channel all the time.
What kind of lift do you see? I guess it varies depending on implementation, but what kind of lift in percentage captured do you see?
So against ReplyY, we've seen up to 3x more subscribers from on-site opt-in than the ReplyY method. So we've seen 2x, we've seen 3x. We've even seen lift on what people would consider to be, you know, the new gold standard in list growth with Amped. We just did an on-site opt-in integration with Amped. So you can use Postscript's on-site opt-in with Amped if you're a Postscript customer. So, you know, we saw brands like Hexclad go through this process. They got an Amped pop-up. Their list grew through the roof. Then they added on-site opt-in to their Amped pop-up and got a 25% lift over that. And so there's a lot of list growth gains to go get out there. On-site opt-in is just one ingredient of a bunch that can help grow your list. But everywhere we see people moving from, you know, 2Tap and ReplyY to on-site opt-in, we're seeing some measurable lift in list growth. And so list growth is really important to building a strong SMS program. You can't have a great SMS strategy without having strong list growth. And on-site opt-in will grow your list faster than any other method out there.
It takes advantage of one of the most like delightful experiences in modern life that only happened in the past like 2 or 3 years. It's like when my phone can take a series of numbers from my text and input it in a form without me having to do anything. It's just this like nice. It's just that feeling of like, okay, finally the future is here. Things are getting better.
Yeah, it's fast. It's seamless. It's like using a pattern that consumers are used to using. Like this isn't like a new invention where you have to teach people how to use something on the mobile web. This is something they use all the time. That's partly, I think, why we see such high conversion as well, is because people are used to clicking that code in the keyboard. So we're excited about it. We're going to continue to innovate on top of on-site opt-in and bring, you know, new, better versions to the table. But yeah, right now, if you want to grow your list as fast as possible, on-site opt-in's the way.
I just saw you make a tweet, I think it was earlier this morning too, that I didn't quite realize. You were mentioning something about Shop Pay and how a large percentage, I like to use Shop Pay whenever I can, but I didn't realize that you have the possibility of actually losing some data when you use Shop Pay. Explain that situation.
Yeah, totally. So pop-ups are the number one way to acquire SMS subscribers, but a distant number two is through checkout collection. So people are checking out and they could subscribe to text as part of the checkout process, and which is great. But when people are using, you know, Shop Pay and using Express Checkout, that removes the ability automatically to collect text on those checkouts unless your SMS provider has a checkout extension that's using the Shopify checkout extensibility that they rolled out, I think, summer last year. Postscript does have an extension that allows you to collect SMS subscribers on a checkout that is being done via Shop Pay. I think other people, I'm not sure if other people have it or not, but we've had it since they rolled it out. So since the summer of last year, it's one of like the more underutilized list growth things that we offer. And it's really easy. You can just add it to your checkout just natively by using the Shopify platform. It's just a lot of people either haven't upgraded and probably should, or a lot of people just haven't added the extension to their checkout, which they definitely should. Because as Shop Pay becomes more and more popular for consumers, that's just more and more of your orders that you're missing out on being able to add them to SMS. So it's a small, easy change, but could have a really, really big impact for folks who have a lot of their customers using Shop Pay to checkout.
You mentioned, you know, when a brand comes on, how you guys like to direct them, where or how you you give them the philosophy, you give them a little bit of how you understand the playbook. We're towards the end of the podcast here, but I'm curious if you could walk me through a little bit of a sketch of what that play, like what, where are the areas that you have new brands coming on focus first?
A lot of people who are coming on to PostScript are moving from other platforms. And so like as part of our onboarding process, what we're trying to do first is to take what's good about their program and get that on to PostScript while we're making our strategic changes. So it's kind of like, okay, migrate this program to PostScript and add our recommendations into that migration off the top. And then what we do from there is what we're trying to do is find the different benchmarks that are good for a brand through an onboarding process using our subscriber LTV framework. So as an example, you know, one of the metrics that we look at is messages per subscriber, which is the total messages that get sent over the past 30 days divided by the total number of subscribers. That's how we get to that metric. We use that in concert with the retention rate, which is the D30 unsubscribe rate that we look at. And what we're trying to do is find that sweet spot. So an example would be as part of our onboarding, we'll start with like 3 messages a month and move to 5 and then move to 8. And what we're trying to do is graduate people out of our onboarding program with green results across all of those metrics. And so our onboarding can be really, really quick for a very mature merchant who's already doing very good stuff over SMS because they might have a A++ program. And for people who have room to improve, we use our onboarding process to get them to green across of our benchmark metrics. So we can like, quote unquote, graduate them into our normal, like ongoing strategic program. But ultimately what we're trying to do is figure out what's unique about that brand and their audience over this channel. And that requires us to do some experimentation across our messaging framework that we use. And our goal is to get everyone green across the board and then, you know, get them onto ongoing strategy. The onboarding's pretty bespoke that way. Our goal is to get everyone off on the right foot and feeling good about the results and ready to go find new incremental revenue. But you got to create a really strong baseline to be able to do that.
And then ultimately, you want them to create SMS as their number one revenue channel. It's a bold claim.
Yeah.
Do you have some brands who has SMS vying or already is their number one revenue channel?
Yeah. You know, it is a bold claim. You know, PostScript's a bold company, so we're excited to shoot for that. We think it's definitely possible, and we think that SMS is going to be a higher engagement channel in the future. So what we're investing in now is only going to pay dividends as time goes on. If you're a brand, you should be thinking about that when it comes to what channels you're investing in. And we do have brands that are making more money over SMS than anywhere else. A very notable example is Dr. Squatch. They make more money from their SMS program than they do from their email program, even though their email list is, you know, 10 times as large as their SMS list. And that's a result of them taking the channel very seriously, leaning into what makes it special, and really trying to cultivate a relationship with their customers and deeply understand their customers and bring that to text. As a result of that, text is a channel that they make more money from compared to their other retention and own channels. And that's a testament to the sophistication of the program that they built.
So people got to go to postscript.io if they want to learn more. Also, you've got a lot of great personnel. You got to follow Alex Beller just for, he's a bit of a scion in the industry. I've really enjoyed his journey, his conversations he's been having in public. Follow you as well, Mike. Where should people follow you?
Yeah, I'm at Mike Manheimer on X, as it's called now. You can find me on LinkedIn. DMs are open. So if you have SMS questions, hit me up. My email's easy too. It's just mike@postscript.io. And I would love to talk to anyone about anything SMS related. If you're interested in learning about how PostScript can help take your SMS program to the next level and you want to partner with the best in class provider, you can find us at postscript.io and we'd love to hear from you.
Let's go. Are you you going to be in any shows in the next few months or through the summer? You got any shows you're planning? We're trying to come out of our shell at D2C, so we're going to be at some shows this summer.
Yeah, we'll be at Grow New York this summer. We'll be at The Lead in New York as well later this summer. And, you know, we generally are all over the place. So like we attend or put on like 50 events a year. So if you are out at a e-commerce or direct-to-consumer focused event, there's a good chance there's a PostScript person there. So hit us up on Twitter and we'll make sure to get connected. We'd love to meet people face to face.
Nice, man. Well, great chatting with you, and let's stay in touch.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.